Hello!
Welcome to Movie Banter.
Ooh.
I've done the move again. It's another cow special.
I'm Paul Carenza.
I'm John Sands. And we're missing Jennifer.
No Jenny again.
Oh.
She's got a job.
She's got a job?
Yeah.
A likely story. She's
working,
in bed. She's
working in a library.
She's still in bed.
A dramatic library.
It is actually a dramatic library. It's the local drama school.
Yes.
But so I think she's surrounded by lovely singing, dancing people.
Well, it's a full-time job in a dramatic library because those silent signs don't work. You know, you've got to actually enforce it.
Yes, well, you've been there yourself, haven't you?
Yeah, exactly.
I'd imagine people, you get people singing from books.
All sirening away and, oh, may I please purchase the latest Shakespeare?
What are the latest Shakespeare? They're not very bright, John, the students.
They're not very intelligent. Yeah, they still put them out. anyway, welcome to Movie Banter. Yes, this is our... first of all, our sort of fortnightly slightly rarer, more sporadic attempts. So thank you for your patience.
Yes.
Very good of you. And this is also the start of the second exciting year.
Mm. Ooh.
Yeah.
We're into year two.
Year
Who
two.
Who knows what's
exactly.
going on? The terrible twos.
Movie Banter 2.0.
Oh, yes. Oh, no, no.
No.
No, okay, it's just irritating.
Okay, well, yes. Anyway.
But also, I mean, the spreading out of podcasts actually helped because it's been quite slim picking cinema.
Well, it has, actually. I think we'd
Because we've had 2012, yeah. And that was
that
2
dominated
weeks ago
the screens,
yeah.
didn't it, really? Yeah.
And now Twilight's out.
And that's dominating a lot of screens
as well. Everything.
Yeah.
And so there's not really... I mean, there are various other films I'd quite like to see.
Well, no,
local
cinema,
Serious Man
just
aren't
and,
yes, and
Informant.
The Informant.
Yeah, they're
no,
just not,
no sign of them.
I know, they're
it's
not
rubbish.
For miles around, thanks to blimmin' 15-year-old girls and their Twilight
exactly.
obsessions.
Who insist on seeing... I know the midnight showing of Twilight, when it was released, was completely sold out.
Really?
Miles ahead. Yeah. Clicked out of curiosity and thought, I bet that's sold out. Oh, it is sold out. It's going to be full of screaming.
Well, I was up in a place called Cheltenham yesterday.
Lovely.
Which is a rather posh place for a gig. And I got there a bit early and was hoping to go and see Twilight and got a little bit late. So I saw Paranormal Activity instead. So we'll talk about Paranormal Activity shortly. But then I came out and I had about an hour to spare before the gig. And I thought, well, I could watch... You know, half of Twilight now. I watch Twill. I watch not the new moon, but a half moon.
Yeah,
I watch that.
You just watch new.
Yeah, just new.
You're going to watch the Twilight sag.
So, actually, it's interesting you said because that's sort of what the film's about.
Really?
Well, it's about because I think this one's
Kristen Stewart knocking on a bit.
Well, no, it's her obsession with the fact that she's going to get old and he won't.
Oh, I see.
Twilight sag. Actually, you've hit the nail on the head. but yeah, no. But the trouble is, I went in. I got the about 7 o'clock showing, and I hadn't obviously. I hadn't got a ticket because I got a ticket for the Paranormal Activity. I thought I'd just walk in and see that. And most of the time, I'm used to going to the cinema in the day, and you can do that. And I got in, it slowly got fuller and fuller, and I suddenly thought, and everyone's looking at their seat numbers, and I thought, oh no, it's one of these where everyone's got a particular seat at any moment now. And I think I must have been in the only seat where no one had bought it.
Oh, really?
Every single person, I thought, oh no, I'm going to be found out. And I wasn't. So,
Well done.
I win. Except I didn't, because I didn't see all of Twilight. So,
well, it's all right, then, but nor did you pay for all of Twilight.
Well, exactly, so there you go. I got my money's worth.
Yes.
Good. So we'll talk a little bit about Twilight.
Do it half of Twilight.
Yeah, yes. Well, let's mention this now as part of our news desk, shall we?
Well, that's true, yes.
This is part of our new news desk feature.
Yes.
Not just old news desk. This is new news desk.
Except there is relatively limited news...
Well,
distance.
I think the big news is that Twilight's out.
Yes, and people were wondering if it was going to break the Dark Knight record.
Yes.
I don't think it has, actually. I think it's broken some. It may have had like the biggest midnight selling, midnight screenings, or the big, and maybe the biggest. I don't think it had the biggest weekend.
Mm.
But it's definitely taken some records, but not all.
It's doing very well, and I actually thought it was, just from what I was hearing sort of on radio and TV, that it was just, you know, the movie going public at large going to see it. And
yeah.
You know, because I'm 30 and not a girl.
Yeah.
And yeah, I'll still go and see it.
Yeah.
And so fair enough. But actually, I went in the cinema, and it was... teenagers everywhere, mostly teenage girls, big groups of like 10, 12 of them, flocks of them. It's like Hindus in making. You can tell it was like sort of not quite terrifying yet, but given 5, 10 years.
They all dressed up?
Not really. I mean, dressed up a little bit, only in a sort of night out, but not dressed up as vampires or anything.
Okay.
No. But yeah, it was clearly, you could tell, this is something that has captured the imagination of this little subgenre group of 14 to 16 year olds.
And the weird thing is that the reviews, I've only read a few reviews which have mostly slagged it off completely.
Yeah,
so it's awful.
Yeah.
It's worse than the first one, and that's something some stiff competition. But in part, I wonder if that's just critics. I mean, Maybell having a valid point, but also they know full well that what they write is mostly irrelevant.
Yeah.
You can have the worst reviews in the world. You could be saying, if you go and see this, you'll come out with swine flu, and you'll still get teenage girls, oh, okay, I'm going to go and see
it. Yeah.
And so they just think, well, in which case, might as well, don't need to try and be fair.
Yeah,
well,
exactly.
Yeah, you know, this annoyed me, so I'm going to say it really annoyed me.
Well, you could hear, as soon as, what's he called, Robert Pattinson came on the screen, you could hear the swooning. There was swooning all around.
You actually hear swooning? There's a thudding of teenage girls dropping like flies.
Exactly, they're still on the floor. Clang. Around, they're all gone.
Wearing suits of armour.
They are, yeah. Well, you know, they've got to stop themselves somehow. So just hurling themselves at the screen. They love him. They do love this odd cliff-faced
man. The scary
man.
Thing is, I was out with a few of our friends this time last week, who are all our age. So with a couple of 30-year-old women, I can't even say girls, really. Okay. Women.
Old women.
And they were all desperate, talking about the books, desperate to see the film.
Dear, oh dear.
One of our friends, who I think, I would have thought would be quite sensible.
Yeah.
She hadn't seen the films, hadn't read the books, didn't care at all. Then was on holiday. The film was on the aeroplane. So he thought, oh, I've seen everything. I'll watch Twilight, why not? Watched it through, and then watched it twice again. Oh, it was a long flight, just because she was in love with him so
really?
Much.
Really? Yeah. Is this Jenny?
No, Sally.
Oh, dear. Yeah. Oh, okay. Oh, I see.
Sally's quite sensible. No, Jenny's the nutcase.
Jenny's got eyes only for Chris Pine, of course.
Oh, yeah. So, no. Jenny, and also, Jenny, while she may be slightly obsessed with Chris Pine, she's more sensible. She's not so easily thrown. By random people. She has very specific interests.
She targets her underage, inappropriately age gapped guy.
But Edward Cullen is not for her.
Dear, oh dear.
But yeah, so I mean, so as men, we can't really relate.
No, we can't use it.
Even because Jen said, no, but don't people fancy Kristen Stewart? Is it Kristen Stewart?
Yeah, yeah.
And I thought, well, sort of, she's attractive enough, but you're not going to get thousands of teenage boys flocking to Twilight to watch Kristen Stewart.
Kristen Stewart always sounds like a newsreader to me. That's why I always I think I'm thinking of Moira Stewart.
Yeah, she's not very like Moira Stewart.
No, she's about a third on many of her age, levels, but, yes. You know. But anyway, so actually, I quite like the is it the sister of Edward Cullen? She's all right.
Possibly.
She's got slightly manic hair.
Yes. And also, isn't Bryce Dallas Howard replacing someone?
Oh, right.
Yes, I think it's one of the relatively not in this in the next one.
Okay.
I think she was in the first film a bit. I can't remember her character name now. And then is in this one not very much.
Right.
But plays a bigger part in the next one.
Okay.
And they've replaced it with Bryce Dallas Howard for some reason. It's a little bit.
Ooh, okay.
Probably
because if Ron Howard's directing, that's often a reason.
I'd like to see a Ron Howard directed Twilight.
That'll be quite good. I'd watch and enjoy.
Well, yes, I'd rather see a Quentin Tarantino Twilight.
There's something to send out to the podcasties.
True.
Which director would you like to see directing a movie episode of Twilight?
Yes.
What would you like?
Let us know. Movie Banter at Movie Banter on Twitter or podcast at moviebanter.co.uk.
Do let us know. I think the Zucker Abrahams trio, that would be quite nice. I'd like to see the airplane naked gun version of Twilight.
I'm amazed, actually, there hasn't been a vampire movie.
Oh, there will be. It's going to be called Vampire Movie as
Almost
you can tell. Yeah.
But they seem to have stopped, actually, for a moment. It seemed to be about every 6 months there was a disaster movie, epic movie.
I think
movie,
there is a new one coming out
really?
Pretty soon.
But is it? It's just going to be called Spoof Movie.
Exactly.
And it'll be, everything will come full circle.
It's Britney Spears with
Britney
a different haircut.
Yes. Yeah. What would be better if I get all actual celebrities to make one called Spoof Movie?
Yeah.
Spoofing... But playing themselves, but being
it's going to be
whatever. It'll be more watchable. Than
either way,
film.
I'm quaking my boots at the prospect. Actually, I saw a clip yesterday of a film which I thought was going to be one of those, but thankfully wasn't. Which I think I was thinking of Date Movie, but this you probably heard of this Date Night.
Date Night. I haven't actually seen the trailer.
Saw the trailer. It looks quite fun actually.
Really?
Tina Fey and Steve Carell.
One of them.
Yeah. A Christmas Carell. And it looks all right because actually it looks.
It's written by someone who's done something quite good, I think.
Well, I expected it to be a sort of rom com type thing because it's about a couple who have a date night out and then they take the wrong reservation of someone in a restaurant and then a whole bunch of calamitous things happen. But it's more of an action movie. There's a lot of all that in there. But it's quite nice then, as you know, you can see this is great marketing. Couples are going to go for their date night because it's called Date Night. And it's got the romantic, slight, you know, kooky thing for the girls.
Lures you in.
And then car chases for the guys. And what I like about it as well, it's all set in one night, which is just like this film called After Hours, which is a Martin Scorsese film from the mid-80s, which is, I think, it's a brilliant film. I was going to say one of his best, but he's made some really good films.
Yes. So, it's one of many other people's
but
best.
But it's one that you don't think of as a great Martin Scorsese film, because it's actually a comedy, and it's all set in one night out. This one guy who sort of goes out and just gets... has a couple of drinks. Again, you know, someone starts chasing him for one reason, then he goes off, has a fling with one woman. And it's just all this one guy getting lost in New York for a night. A bit like grown-up version of Nick and Nora's Infinite Playlist.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
So, just about.
Yeah, anyway, worth a look. We should probably crack on with some other things, because we've got lots to fit in. We've got an interview with David Bloom, who's the screenwriter of Donkey Punch. We'll have the second half of that. We've got Paranormal Activity, which we'll talk about shortly.
Oh, yes.
Regular features in This Week in Movie History, and your emails, Desert Island Flicks, which this week we will do Best Found Footage Film.
Yes.
Ooh.
Because Paranormal Activity, it starts, it pads out that niche a bit.
It does, rather. So, yes, we've found some footage of us talking about Desert Island Flicks, and we're going to play it out in a mysterious way. We've also got some, but we might talk about some DVDs as well. We've seen a few of those. So
yes,
we've got
because cinema slim picking has been, we've got to pad it out.
And it's cold out, so you might as well just stay at home and watch a DVD.
Stop that cold, big girl.
I know, yes. So anyway, let's the first film. Let's talk about what this big release this week over here. Anyway, it's a little bit later than internationally, which is Paranormal Activity.
Yes,
and I actually, I'll start on the release date thing because I start off was thinking a bit annoyed that we're getting it so late. Mm. Surely Halloween has just happened. Why are we getting it now? It's like late November. That's bad marketing. It's bad planning on their part.
Because I think it was released in America around the same time as Saw, which was around Halloween. And, and it ate into Saw's box office.
And we really needed a good Halloween film because it was really slim picking this
year. Saw 6 didn't really do it.
No, and there was it was really not much out for Halloween. So that was pretty, pretty awful. Halloween 2 was the other thing out. And not good, not good. This would have been great, though. I thought it was a really lovely movie and really well done. You could tell really small budget. In fact, I've since found out it's $15,000 it took to make.
Nice.
And took $9 million US dollars in its first week of opening in the US. Cool. So that's
actually, didn't the guy who make it, didn't he film it in his own house or in a normal house?
Well, that's the thing. I looked into it afterwards, and my annoyance at how long it's taken to get here is a bit ill-judged. Because
it was made in 2007.
Well, for a start, it was made 2 years ago, yeah. Then it did the film festival circuits in sort of 2007, 2008. And, and so then it just basically spent the last 2 years buzzing around film executives' offices, and they're trying to sort of... And they're actually looking to remake it. They weren't going to release
right.
it. But as part of the contract, they said, OK, we want one screening where we're just going to show the original, and then just to get an idea of what to change about, and so people will do that. And people started walking out. And they're going, this is really bad. This original is clearly not good. And how are we going to remake this? People don't like it at all. And they interviewed people walking out, and it turns out they were just so frightened. And they suddenly went, wow, okay, if they're frightened. And actually, the fact they were walking out made them think, forget the remake, we'll just show this. And so they edited it a little bit. Steven Spielberg got involved, did a bit of editing himself, and a few suggestions. And then it actually only had a release of, I think, two or three cinemas in the US, student towns. They particularly thought students were like this. And they did that in early October without any plan of a release anywhere else at all. So there's me moaning about, you know, God, they could have planned this better. And it 6 weeks ago, this wasn't going anywhere. They did it, and I'm quite impressed at the turnaround. In a week later, it was on in, I think, 10 towns across America.
Mm.
And then Paramount, who released it, have said, they said, we'll do a national release if we get a million votes on our website to say please release this nationally. 3 days later, a million votes, and so they went, fine, you voted, the fair nation enough. Gets it, and then we got it a month later. So.
Which probably also explains why it was out on Halloween. I mean, partly it's a good time to release it, but I'd imagine if studio executives had planned it, they probably would have said, no, Saw's out at Halloween, don't approach on that.
Well, true.
As it is, they just say, well, this is brilliant, people are flocking to it, we're going to show it regardless.
Exactly, and so, it's certainly made exactly the money that they were wanting for it, so it's done very, very well. And, I mean, to the film itself, I think it's a lovely little example of this found footage genre, and also a great way of showing that, you know, a filmmaker can make a really good film without a massive crew and a massive budget. And, I mean, he even used it, you know, the trailer, I think, is quite almost famous now, really, in that it's got shots of the audience leaping out their seats and lots of sort of still camera footage, almost like CCTV camera, of just the corner of a bedroom, and they're filming to see what happens in this paranormal house. And that was largely done because he didn't have a camera crew. So he just put it on a tripod and thought, well, that way I'll just film it and do it that way. So, you know, but it goes to show you can tell a really good story with that, and they've done really well with it. But, I mean, for those who don't know, the rough plot of it is it's just a couple in a house. There are strange goings on, ghostly things. So the guy gets a video camera and says, well, let's document it.
Right.
And then it gets progressively worse. And it turns out that perhaps this camera, being there in the first place, is angering the ghost.
No.
Which sort of makes sense, because for a little while I was thinking, well, why is it that it just so happened, apparently they've had all these strange goings all their life. Mm. Suddenly they get the camera in and it gets a lot worse.
Yeah.
They do work it out in the plot that way. And I think the real highlights of the film for me were the still camera, you know, the stuff that they do in the day and they're filming, interviewing each other and saying, well, what do you think it is? That's all filler, really. And it's
I'm guessing there's nothing horror there.
No, well, it's just occasionally. Daylight. You just hear an occasional noise or whatever, but you need that stuff to drive it all forward and so that it's not just a still camera for 90 minutes. But the clever things really are when you cut to the bedroom and you've got a little time code in the corner and it says like 1:05 a.m. and it fast forwards on and they're lying there in bed. You can tell the actors have lain there for 2, 3, 4 hours. They are acting at night, basically. They are just lying there. And then the woman gets up out of bed and then just stands for 4 hours. And you think, that's the actress has done that. Or, you know, maybe not for 4 hours. They fast-forwarded it. She's done a lot of this. And then, you know, the door slams or the sheets magically sort of appear up or there's footsteps on the floor suddenly. And it's real, you know, old-school haunted house stuff.
Tension building.
But it's brilliant.
Yeah.
And they do it really well.
Is there any music in it?
No, I don't think so. No music
so
at all.
It is just... purely
there's no credits.
The footage was supposed
there's
to
not out. Even any credits. It's just a screen at the end saying that's a lot and no titles. It's the only Paramount film ever to not have the Paramount logo. They have stripped it right down, and I think it's if you like this sort of thing. I know you're not a horror fan, so I don't know.
No, not really.
I don't know if you'll see it or not, really. But
it's weird. Well, I think Jane is very keen to see it, and so I may get dragged by her. As I said, because my flatmate's going to see it on Friday,
right?
And I was saying, well, possibly, but I'm just not that bothered. But I did say that. But Jen's keen to see it, so she might persuade me. Because frankly, she's a lot prettier than my flatmate.
Fair point.
And I'm shallow.
That'll do it. Yeah.
Well, so we shall see.
I think it is. It's a scary enough film, and it's it succeeds at doing at making you jump enough that whoever you go and see it with will probably want to hold on to you. So I'd go with Jen.
So Gav, it is then.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, up to you. Exactly. Yeah.
No, so, Jen's not easily scared.
So choose that well. We can hold on to her, that's all right.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
But yeah, so I thought it's a fine little movie. Is it better than Blair Witch? I don't know. It owes a lot to it, certainly.
Yes.
In a way, I prefer it because it's more simple location, which kind of makes it more claustrophobic in a way, really. Whereas Blair Witch was, of course, a bit broad, a bit more out there. But Blair Witch did it first, so I think I've got to give that more credit for doing it first.
And also, because Blair Witch, it was almost one of the first viral marketing things of using the internet and saying, oh, this footage actually exists. Look, this is a real thing. Whereas with Paranormal Activity, I don't think anyone's pretending it's real, really. I mean, it looks real, obviously, just the way it's shot, but it's kind of like Cloverfield in that way.
Yes.
In that the studio isn't saying, hey, we found this, look, we're going to make a film of it. They're just sort of saying, here's the film, enjoy
it. Well, when you watch the film, because
it's strongly implied that it's a real thing, but it's not.
Use their real names as well.
Yes, so except you wouldn't know that unless you knew who they were.
Quite nice, I looked at the IMDb afterwards, and the actor in it has done nothing since.
Oh, really?
So it does look like he has just vanished off the map. Wow. Nice. The actress has done something since, so it kind of ruins it.
Yeah, fair enough. But I think that's the way to go. Because the Blair Witch did the supposedly real footage thing, it's better just to put the film out there, and then people can start wondering, is it real, is it not?
Yeah, exactly.
Rather than trying to say it's real, whenever, as happened with The Fourth Kind.
Well, exactly.
When they've tried to say, oh, no, this is all real, and it's not, and it really, and everyone knows it isn't.
The
but
owls,
it just sounds really... bloody owls.
Anyway. I think The Fourth Kind of gutted that Paranormal Activity has come along and done just what they wanted to do, but on a cheaper budget.
Cheaper
and
a lot better.
Far better. So, Fourth Kind is still out, and I don't know who's seeing it. I think people might go and see it who've seen Paranormal Activity, don't read reviews, don't see trailers and go, oh, that looks rubbish. But just see it advertised and go, oh, looks a bit like...
I wonder if there may well be also some people who, if they've seen both trailers once or twice, and they sort of forget which is which. They go, oh, isn't that one? Yeah, let's go and see that one.
Yeah.
And then get disappointed.
Which is the one with the owls?
Is it Harry Potter? No.
We'll talk a bit more about the found footage stuff as we do Desert Island Flicks at the end. But for now, should we move along to In This Week in Movie History?
Let's do it.
Woohoo!
Bring it on.
Okay, right. Here are some things. You tell me what the other things are.
Here are some dates and events.
That's the thing. I must pick a handy way of explaining what the format is.
We'll read out dates and events. And then you have to choose or work out what film it's from.
Exactly. So, for example, your starter for 10 is 1996, November the 20th, a week ago. John Spartan is cryogenically frozen after his encounter with Simon Phoenix.
That is going to be Demolition Man.
Correct. Demolition Man it is.
So that set of starts in 96.
96, yeah.
Fair enough. And that was only made in 93.
Well, exactly.
They clearly thought LA was going to go to hell in a hurry.
Bad planning on their part, I think. Bad planning. Okay, November 23rd, 1978. Thanksgiving. Happy Thanksgiving, by the way, if you're American.
Oh, yes, for Americans.
Well done. Well done, there you go.
For Brits, good riddance.
Exactly, well done, we got rid of him.
Yes.
1978, November 23rd, Arnie visits Dennis in hospital after Moochie is killed by Christine.
Oh, that's presumably Christine.
Indeed, yes.
So you gave it away a bit.
Exactly. Well, I know, I was going to say by a car, but then you probably work it out. I was
well, thinking sure. Killed in a car accident.
That's true.
Said, of course,
that's
wasn't an accident. It was
no,
a murderous
very much not an accident.
Yes. I know they haven't remade Christine, actually.
Very true. So, we're probably on the way.
Yeah, probably.
You wait and see.
Apparently, November, actually, but, cutting back to News Desk just briefly.
Yes. Oh, News Desk. Update.
Stephen King has made noises about writing a sequel to The Shining.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh.
Following, I can't remember, is it Danny, the little boy?
Yeah.
Who's now 40 and living and working in a hospital.
Interesting.
And sort of helping people who are ill to sort of pass over using his weird shining skills.
Wow.
Which sort of works. Yeah. At the same time, it's clearly a bit of a cash-in.
Ooh.
I think someone online said, why not? It sounds like an interesting enough idea, but why taint The Shining? Why not, why not just write that as a whole new character and go with that?
Yeah,
but,
true.
Anyway.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah. Anyway, but then a lot of Stephen King's books do link in with other books. He's got uses the same places and people sometimes.
Oh, really?
So that's, I can imagine for him, he doesn't necessarily see it as a cash-in sequel.
Yeah.
As much as a, well, we've got the characters up and running.
Tarantino universe-esque.
Yeah, exactly.
Sort of,
yeah,
fair enough.
Yes.
Anyway, sorry. Back to
good. Okay.
Back to movie history.
Okay, November 24th, 1989. Harvey Dent.
Yeah.
Need I continue?
Yeah, Batman.
Is elected DA of Gotham City.
Batman.
Indeed, Batman.
Oh, the wonderful, wonderful
there
Batman.
There you are. The original. Well.
No, not the original.
Not the original.
No, because the original was awful.
The
Batman the movie is just. Oh.
It's not awful.
It is awful.
It's not. It's got Adam West
it's got
in
Adam
it.
West in tights.
Exactly.
I like Adam West in Family Guy and as his mad self. And in the Hawaii Five-O spoof thing,
like
it was a Danger Theatre. That was good. But Batman, no, it's just sick and wrong.
Yeah, schnaggle, frangle.
Anyway, the Burton Batman is awesome.
Now, this is interesting, because it does sort of sound a bit like the previous one, but it's not. Okay.
Right.
November 27th, 1978. I'll say the surname, because I have to. But that was Harvey Dent, who was elected DA of Gotham City. This is Supervisor Harvey Milk.
Oh, right.
Who was assassinated.
Fair enough. That'll be
Milk. Obviously, yes. Actually, I didn't realise this, assassinated by former supervisor Dan White. So,
yes,
White killed Milk, which is rather colourful.
It's not, actually. It's quite bland.
It is quite.
It's very pale.
There you are. So two Harveys there, one doing very well and one not so much. But
except, of course, the Harvey that did do well then went on to really not do very well.
Well, very true, very true. But that's for another week.
Well, it is, yes.
Okay, last couple here. November 28th, 2008, Black Friday, the most feared shopping day at all shopping malls, and also the day that the mall cop happens to intervene in a bank robbery.
Oh, I've got no idea. I'm going to have to just completely out of the blue, going to go for mall cop.
Paul Blart, mall cop. Yes. There you go. That's the fella. And finally for this week, November 30th, 1954, Tokyo attempts to return to normality after total distraction from Godzilla.
It's going to be, it may not be as simple as this, but is it just Godzilla?
Yes, Godzilla, King of the Monsters.
Ah, fair enough.
But to be fair, this week...
I know there are several.
They're all quite easy. I think the title of each film was actually mentioned in pretty much all of those.
Well, yes.
So, anyway, you live and learn. So now we can bring exclusively our second part of our interview with Mr. David Bloom, who's
proper,
screenwriter.
Proper filmmaker and everything.
Exactly, screenwriter of Donkey Punch, which is this British thriller set on a boat when a bunch of teenagers go out there and decide to, try Donkey Punch.
Yeah.
And I won't tell you what one of those is.
No,
suffice to say, it's a bizarre sexual act and you shouldn't do it.
Well, yes. Look up Urban Dictionary, look up Donkey Punch,
yeah,
and
we'll
then waste an hour looking
indeed
at all the other weird deviant stuff you never knew existed.
Indeed. And then say goodbye to your day and your office if you're using a work computer.
Well, yes, and your sense of morality.
Indeed. So, if you want to catch part one, that was on two episodes ago. And we pick this interview up when we've just been talking about the fact that David Bloom was, in fact, a stand-up comedian before being a screenwriter. And let's take it from there.
You mentioned then that your background was stand-up comedy as well. And so those who, you know, if someone approached this film not knowing what it was going to be about, they might expect a stand-up comedian before, therefore may make an all-out comedy.
Mm.
Was that ever cross your mind? Or what?
Well, I mean, I've always thought of it as a romantic comedy.
And it is. I mean, there are comic moments, certainly. in amongst the murder and
the mayhem. Yeah. I think with this particular part, I have a background in comedy. and I sort of bring, let's say, a blackly comic standpoint to things, but what we didn't want to do was make a film that was too glib. It was important to us that as much as you can, you care about at least some of these characters. And, you know, you wanted to show a film where they have to, in a way, take responsibility for their actions. And you could, there are some very successful films that are very comic, you know, the Scream, things that blend this sort of thing. We kind of felt that had been done very successfully and we didn't want to go down that route. So the first draft probably was a lot more bleak and a lot more humorous. And then we kind of pulled back in subsequent drafts and made it a bit more, you know, real.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it does give it a sort of very real edge, I think. It shows that you're not sort of taking the mick at, I think, with the genre. And it's what I liked about it as well is it all seems quite logical as well when it actually, although, yes, these people in an extreme situation, it does seem like, okay, well, if they're on the run from that thing, then that, you can almost see how it does pile up in that sense, which is nice because otherwise you could take that for granted, isn't it?
I think so. We spent a lot of time, you know, when you write a film, you know, a lot of people read it before it ever reaches the screen. And it has to be bulletproof in a way.
Yeah.
You can't have a thing in it where someone goes, oh, well, why would they do that? Well, because, let me put it this way, before it ever gets to the screen, so many people have read it and said to you, well, on page 87, why would they do that? I mean, surely they already know that he knows that they know. And you go, oh, yeah, good point. Okay, and then you have to go back and rework it, which is why it's so amazing when you watch films and you go, huh?
Yeah.
Why
did they do that? Yeah, of course.
And you realise something went wrong. Mm. They had to fix it in the edit. They didn't work out on the day. You know, you never know. But we just wanted to make this film bulletproof. And we wanted to make sure that every single decision they make, even if it's a terrible decision, makes sense in that moment. Because that's what it's about. It's basically, you've got a split second. Do you do the right thing or do you do the expedient thing, which is, oh, let's get rid of the body.
Or yeah,
let's,
of course. Yeah.
Let's just do, you know. And they pay.
Indeed, yeah. Well, I thought, it was a lovely moment was when they were looking for the tape. And you could see the logical sense that he's going to want the tape from that guy. The things that he does to get the tape make sense. The things that the girl does to get the tape make sense. And then, of course, what happens from there, everyone's on their own forever. Everyone is turned against everyone else then. And it's a nice MacGuffin as well.
Yeah, you know? So, we did it, yeah. Because at points you're like, oh, should it be the tape? Should it be the camera? Do we, you know? But yes, MacGuffin is always a good...
Yes, indeed, yeah.
A good thing to have.
A good chicken egg MacGuffin. So what about when you're actually writing then? Can I just ask quickly about your process, I suppose? And do you write together? Would you and Ollie write the thing together in a room? Or do you sort of alternate scenes? Or
We did it every single way. I mean, we've known each other a long time. We have a very good rapport. So what was very good was that, you know, at the beginning, we could spend a lot of time doing, you know, kind of what we just discussed, which is, okay, well, if they did that, what would happen next? And you just have to plot out the story that way. And you create what they call a beat sheet or a treatment, or scriptament, or whatever. You know, it has all these ridiculous names. But essentially, it's a document that tells you every, you know, two or three lines, what happens in every scene. And then once that has been agreed with the financiers and the people, you know, there's a lot of other people who have to buy into it. Then you actually get to write the script. And that's the fun bit. And, you know, we were sort of working to a deadline. And so, you know, sometimes we write together, sometimes we write on our own and then pass it on. And then he would do a pass on my work and so on and so forth. And at a certain point, Ollie went off to South Africa to prep the movie. And I was sort of, you know, working my own to actually get, you know, the changes that we agreed done in time.
Yeah.
And then we had a rehearsal. The actors had never met. Before we got to South Africa, the actors had actually never been in a room together. We did a read-through with the actors, which with a video link to the people who are paying for the movie, and then made some last-minute adjustments off the back of that. And then they shot them.
Okay. Kind of thing. Yeah, wonderful, wonderful. Just you mentioned film school as well. Would you say... is that, do you think, a must-do then, would you say, for screenwriters? Or was it particularly helpful for you? It's not essential, but good for you?
It was important for me, I think, because it made me think of myself as a writer, mm-hmm. as opposed to, oh, this is a hobby or whatever. Yeah. You think, no, I am a writer. There is, you know, in a sort of career progression. Film school is a good thing, but it's a big investment. Mm-hmm. It's a risky investment because it's a lot of time and it can be a lot of money. I was very lucky in that the film school that I went to is very well supported by things like Skillset, and they have a lot of bursaries and sponsorships. So it, you know, wasn't that excruciating for me. But you are taking a risk. Mm. And a lot of people in my line of work in screenwriting don't find work afterwards. And they go off into all different sorts of things, and it's a really rewarding use of 2 years. But you know, even working screenwriters find it very, very hard to get work. And having been to a film school is no guarantee.
True.
Because basically, you know, you're only as good as your next idea.
Yes, of course. Yeah.
So it's, you know, the fact that you've written a good movie the best thing is to have written a successful movie.
Mm.
That always helps. But there are no guarantees.
I know we need to wrap up, of course. Sure. A bit of man, but speaking of the next idea, then, is there anything you're working on of interest? Donkey Punch 2?
I can show you this bit.
Absolutely. I will say nothing.
Treatment, step out. Like, wow. Yeah, I'm working with the same director from Donkey Punch. We have a movie with a company that they are remaking a French film from the 80s. They, for various reasons, they want to remake this French film from the 80s that's very popular in France. Mm-hmm. No one here has ever heard of it,
right?
Which is good.
Excellent.
And it is basically a bit, it's kind of in a Luc Besson kind of vein, you know, it's kind of, it's like a chalk and cheese buddy movie with a heist and then another heist and some double crossing, you know.
Lovely.
It's kind of big, fun, very mainstream movie. We've got two very successful British actors who are already attached to it. And we are very busy agreeing. I think this week we're going to finish the treatment. And hopefully, you know, in a week's time, we'll start work on the script.
Mm-hmm.
So,
wonderful.
It's exciting.
Exciting times. Wonderful.
Yes.
Well, thank you much indeed for your time. You've been most generous. One final question. Can we tempt you back to the stand-up circuit at all?
I don't think the stand-up circuit's ready for what I've got.
Is that right?
I did a speech at my wedding.
Okay. Yes.
I had a good crowd.
Yeah.
But
did that suddenly remind you of the?
Reminded me of the good gigs.
Yeah. Obviously, yeah, that's true. But you know.
But they're never going to be as well-meaning as some of the other audiences.
No, fair point. Yeah. Wonderful. Well, comedy's loss is the British film industry's gain. So there you go. I thought that was a train of the way here. Thank you very much indeed, David Bloom. Thank you.
Thank you, Paul.
Well, that was Mr. David Bloom, Fide screenwriter extraordinaire.
Oh, yes.
I can't wait to see what he does next. Well, in fact, I know what he does next.
Oh, really?
Because he showed me the script, as you will have heard in the interview just then.
Oh.
But I can't tell you. Well, I can tell you, I just can't tell them.
Oh, see. Yeah. Oh, I'm special, apparently.
Yeah, you are very special. All sorts of ways. But for now, your tweets and your emails. You've been very kind and very generous and emailed us podcast@moviebanter.co.uk, or you've tweeted us at moviebanter.
Yes.
Tweets.com/moviebanter. You can go and see all the tweets there. So a couple of tweets, first of all. This was a belated anniversary wishing from last episode. Richard Berryman said, "Happy anniversary, guys. Roll on another 52.
Oh, thank you very much.
Favourite film, Big Lebowski or Pulp Fiction?
Fair choices.
There you go.
Fair choices.
Apart from Big Lebowski, which I can't stand.
Really? It's a phenomenally good film.
I only found out recently Mark Kermode hates it as well.
Well,
he loves Coen Brothers films. Is it Coen Brothers?
Yeah,
it is. Loves Jeff Bridges, but not that film. And I agree.
I really, really don't.
Yeah, but a lot of people,
I absolutely love it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's one of the more normal Coen Brothers films.
I guess so.
I think. If you're being pretentious,
mood.
Then
yeah.
Well, give it another go because it really is funny.
I also don't like green nail varnish. That's probably what did it for me.
What?
Isn't there green nail? Oh, green toenail thing.
Yeah, at one point.
Yeah, exactly.
It's hardly central to the entire.
Puts me off the whole film. also a tweet from Review to a Kill, who said it was just a review. We just asked for your reviews via tweet, so you're welcome to do that anytime. And he was saying about 2012, which we actually were kind of praising last week.
I really liked it.
You particularly said it was the best disaster movie ever.
Mm.
Yeah. Review to a Kill disagrees. Says it was uninspiring, overblown tosh, yet strangely entertaining in parts. You see? There you go. But far too long.
Yeah. I wouldn't say far too long. It is definitely too long. It could be. Yes. It could be.
But it has to. It feels like that. You can't make it in 90 minutes.
I think it's uninspiring. No disaster film. I don't find any disaster film inspiring because they're all formulaic.
True.
Overblown, possibly, but that's what I want from a disaster film. I want it to be overblown so much that everything gets blown up.
We also have thoughts on this from Johan, who said, well, he sent us a nice email about, said, oh, I forgot to wish my favourite podcasters a happy birthday.
Oh, shocked to
I assume he means us and not some other favourite podcasters.
No, maybe just telling us. Awesome. Thank you very much.
He says, you guys kept me laughing through some hard times, and I appreciate that a lot. Bless you, Johan. So happy birthday to the three of you. Well, we'll pass it on to Jen.
We won't.
On to Designer Flicks. 2012 was absolutely horrible.
Oh.
Hated the beginning of the film, practically fell asleep in the middle, and towards the end was glad it was over. The only gleam of light in the film was Woody Harrelson's character.
That was hilarious. Yeah, he was a nice surprise, actually. Because none of the trailers mentioned any credits or anything. He just had to... And he's not featured in the trailers. When he suddenly pops up,
And Johan's talking particularly about our best disaster film we talked about last week, Design of Flicks. And he says, I Am Legend or Cloverfield would take it for him.
Ooh, I Am Legend, really?
I didn't
That's
like
a
I Am
disappointing
Legend.
Film.
Didn't like it at all. Yeah. But he said, Johan's a fan of the book, you see, like Richard Matheson's book. And,
I haven't read the book apparently is very good, but the film is a little bit...
Yeah, didn't quite do it for me. Just saying, Cloverfield, just so creative, and its monster is just a beauty.
Yeah, very good point.
Hardly ever see, but that's the whole joy of it, really. Oh, yes. So there you go, and a couple of 2012 thoughts I was going to mention from last week and forgot to. One was, I mean, mainly from a British perspective here, largely the fact that, for a start, the Queen. We see the Queen at one point, don't we?
With her corgis.
rather selfishly pushing me out of the way. Which I didn't buy for a start. Also the fact that the Italian Prime Minister in this film is the one who they say, oh, he's decided to stay with his people.
Yeah.
And given that they seem to be sort of, you know, they've got Schwarzenegger in there. And
it's kind
of
implying it's in reality.
Yeah,
they've got our Queen.
Yeah, they've got Igarka, they've got Angela Merkel-ish sort of character. Yeah. And so there.
So Silvio Berlusconi is not going to be staying.
Berlusconi would be the first on those
boats. He would be demanding his own harem.
Absolutely, there's no way he would be staying with his people.
He would have paid his way on for him and hundreds of others.
Unless he was getting to the getaway craft and suddenly went, "Ooh, a brothel!" And is that libelous? I don't know.
We're talking about fictional
exactly.
2012 version.
Exactly.
Who happens to be called Silvio Berlusconi?
That's all it is. That's all it is.
But yes.
Yeah. I always get that with. Particularly like American films, their version of, like, you know, the policeman, they had a quick shot, they say the Olympics has been cancelled, and they show policemen, but policemen wearing 80s police uniforms, I noticed.
Yeah, I got a lot of people submitting mistakes about that, and just saying, it's clearly footage from about 20 years ago, whereas now, basically, I think someone just said, now British policemen are essentially well-equipped for riots, whereas in that, it was 80s footage, where they're pretty much just wearing their normal
running
uniform.
After people with a truncheon, exactly. Going, come back here, you ruffian!
Yes, and now you've got, you know, tasers and stab vests and batons and everything.
Stop, or I'll say stop again, louder!
I'll throw this at you.
Email from Ryan Peterson.
Hello, Ryan.
Hello, Ryan. Says, no, it's a couple of weeks late, but I've been away for a while. We don't need your excuses.
Just do 100 lines.
Exactly. But no, you're well. Anyone's always welcome to email in past episodes, because
we're
well aware it takes a while to get through the podcast. It's fine. So Ryan's saying, in episode 50 for us, you asked about our favourite Halloween movies and traditionally what you watch then. Personally, every Halloween, I absolutely have to see The Changeling with George C. Scott. I think that one is a perfect example of how scary movies work best. The mood created by the movie is superb because they take the time to build it up. They make you tense, waiting for what's going to happen next. Personally, I've never been so scared of a ball bouncing down the stairs in my life.
Yeah.
More importantly, I watch it every year, yet there are sections that still give me full body chills, such as when George C. Scott is listening to the recording of the séance. Now, I've never seen The Changeling.
Nor have I, I'm sorry.
But I do love a proper scary movie, just like he's described it, and I've added it today to my rental list.
Nice.
So thank you, Ryan, for your suggestion. I look forward to reporting back nice things about that one.
So it is, but that is the proper way to make a horror, because that's a lot of modern horror films, or even older horror films, like Texas Chainsaw Massacre and stuff. If you rely too much on just, blood, gore, death, that's not really horror. And even jumps aren't so much horror. It's got to be low tension, which sounds like what Paranormal Activity does quite well.
Yeah, just build up the tension. That's what we want. No, the stabby things. So, quickly, some DVDs then.
Yes,
before we get to Desert Island Flicks. What have you seen this week?
I saw Crank 2. which
High Voltage.
Which I've been looking forward to for a long time. And it's just as utterly mental as I was hoping it would be. Because I'm a fan of the first Crank, and it's pretty much the same. It's even sillier.
So this is a bit like Christmas with the Cranks, is that right?
Very, very similar, yes. A bit like the Crankies.
Yeah.
But no, this is Jason Statham, who in the first film got injected with a toxin and then had to keep his adrenaline up. In this one, He's had his heart taken out and replaced an artificial heart powered by a battery, and so he's got to keep himself charged up somehow. And he starts off having a battery you can charge, and that gets destroyed.
Yeah.
And so he just has to generate electricity by grabbing hold of power cables and rubbing himself up against people for static electricity.
Why wouldn't you?
And it's just all the way through just shooting people and maiming them.
Of course.
And it's just a very entertaining film, but very much a turn your brain off.
Yeah. Well, this is one that we had reported on one of our guest comics a few weeks ago. Phil Butler said that he saw this when he was doing some gigs for the troops in Afghanistan.
Oh, right.
And Afghanistan, that's right. And they had a film night. And of course, if you are a room full of 1,000 gun-toting blokes and some girls as well, of course, I'm pretty sure. But I'm guessing they're not going to show My Big Fat Greek Wedding.
No,
they're going to go more down the crank to High Voltage Route, and that's what he saw it with that lot.
I imagine that's probably a very good audience to see it.
It probably is. I think. Yeah. No, I look forward to seeing that myself.
It's just very silly. But it's indicative because it's the same guys who did Gamer, which is awful. And so it's showing they can make, I wouldn't necessarily say a good film, but they can make a brilliant example of that sort of film.
Yeah, a better film than Gamer.
Yes, whereas Gamer is just that sort of kind of thing done wrong.
No, fair.
Also The Prestige.
Oh, yes.
Which Christopher Nolan, post Batman Begins.
Yeah, that's right.
I think, but pre Dark Knight. Was it post? Yeah, I think it was post Batman. Yeah. And that was a stunningly good film. I've forgotten quite how good it was.
That's good, isn't it?
With lots of, not even twists and turns, but it just goes forward and the plot develops.
It keeps you guessing.
Yeah, and, in ways you're not necessarily expecting or can see coming. And then it's sort of, I mean, it's all about magic, and it does sort of work magic tricks on you, and it sets up certain things.
Nice period piece as well.
Yeah, and then distracts you and misleads you. And
got there before, was it The Illusionist?
Yeah, The Illusionist was around the same time, and that was not a good film. Not a fan.
Equally, Magicians, which was a David Mitchell, Robert Webb. A comedy version. I never saw it.
It was meant to be not very good. But The Prestige, it was a little, I mean, it didn't sort of sneak under the radar, but it seems to have faded a bit from memory. If you've not seen it, definitely seek it out. Yes. Brilliant film.
Okay. I saw Tropic Thunder for the first time. I've never seen that before.
I remember quite liking that.
It was all right. It was better than I thought it'd be, actually, because I think I'd heard a lot of critics saying, well, actually, it's funny, but it could have done with being funny with a tenth of the budget, because big budget comedies are never normally quite as good as the small ones. But it had its moments, certainly. It had its controversial moments, I'll certainly give it that. It's got some rather dodgy stuff about everything from race to mental disability and everything in between.
Oh yes, but it does handle them in sort of controversial ways, but also at least in a funny way as well.
Yeah.
Rather than just sort of saying, look, we're doing this, isn't that outrageous and funny? It's like, well, no, they're not doing that. They've actually made, saying, this has been outrageous, but also funny with it.
Yes.
They're not just relying on saying, look, we blacked someone up and that's the joke.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, well, no, there's more to it than that.
And it reminds you how funny people like Ben Stiller and like Matthew McConaughey even, who's, often lambasted, if that's the right word.
Yeah.
For
playing himself in every rom-com.
And these awful ghosts of girlfriends past and things like that. And, those are, in inverted commas, comedies.
Yes.
Failed comedies. Whereas he's funny in this one.
And Tom Cruise.
And Tom
very
Cruise
good cameo
as
well.
Excellent, with his massive hands. And the last one I saw this week was a film called Stuck, which is a very unusual film. Stephen Ray, R-E-A from The Crying Game.
Yes.
What's the name? The American Beauty, Mina Savari.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so two names, difficult to pronounce. But anyway, it's a nice little, very odd film, low budget, and Mina Savari is driving along, hits Stephen Ray, and he goes through her windscreen and stays there. And she drives him home to her house, to her garage, puts him in the garage, panics, doesn't know what to do, says, I'll go and call for help, goes and tries, fails, forgets, and
forgets.
Just leaves him there. And he's there for like 2 or 3 days. And it's this odd film where the entire film, one of the leads is stuck in a windscreen.
Because it does sound like a comedy.
But it does. And it's got comic moments, I suppose, in it. It's just got odd moments. It's sort of, because you can't really see it happening in reality. So it's an odd idea. It's certainly an original. And if you're a fan of that, it's only like an hour and 20 long. So I'd recommend it for worth the time, certainly.
Yeah. I think that's a lot.
That's a lot. We've got a lot to cram in this week. And we're looking forward to, in next week, we'll review Twilight properly.
Yes.
And we'll do plus many more other things. If we can find the informant, if it comes to a cinema near us.
Well, hopefully so.
And a serious man, all these sorts of things, we'll try and dig them out for you. In the meantime, Desert Island Flicks this week, we thought we'd do our found footage.
Yes.
Which is normally it's a horror thing, isn't it, really?
I think so. I don't think there are any non-horror films that do it.
Yeah.
The closest probably the one that I think I'm going to choose, which is Cloverfield.
Oh, yes.
Because that's obviously has a lot of horror elements, but isn't, it's more
sort of thriller,
intense thriller.
Apocalyptic sort of.
Yeah, but it's definitely on the horror
disaster
spectrum.
It's a disaster movie, isn't it, really? Yeah.
But you don't get any sort of rom-com camcorder films.
No, you don't get
which
this.
Which is odd, actually. You would have thought that could almost work.
This footage was found after this couple went off and eloped together. This, for the first time, is the story of how they got together.
Oh, yes.
So it'd be just like the beginning bit of Cloverfield, just dragged out over a film.
Well, yeah, but I'd imagine there is that film to be made.
Yeah, I can imagine it's doable. And again, all these first-time film directors and writers, you know, they need to make a film on a budget, like indeed Paranormal Activity did, or Blair Witch guys did. So, you know, why not try and work it out that way? It might be doable.
Yeah, I mean, it should be, because given the prevalence of people filming stuff and mobile phones and all the rest of it, you'd have thought you could make it work plot-wise. But
I think it's always going to be... You could do it on a home camera, like... Richard Linklater's Slacker, for example. That was quite a sort of low budget, or like Kevin Smith's Clarks, that sort of thing. But you're always, you're probably not going to call it a found footage genre, because the only reason you'd find it is if everyone in it died.
I was going to say you could set it sort of some sort of futuristic films on finding like an old, but it doesn't.
I don't know.
I think these mainly have to be horror, because the whole point of the handheld is it makes it a bit more intense, and a bit more visceral, and a bit more.
And the whole point
that's
thing
not
is,
really what you want from a rom-com.
And the thing is that the idea is that at the end of it all, the only thing left, the only thing that survives, is the footage. So no one else can really, in a way. But but anyway, you look at things like The Last Broadcast, did it at the same time as Blair Witch, Zombie Diaries, Diary of the Dead. I've seen Quarantine. Was that based on the same footage? That was actually based on Wreck. So it was all right, but I think for me, I'm probably going to go with Blair Witch.
No,
because I think although I think Paranormal Activity is certainly on a par with it, I think Blair Witch did it first, and therefore broke some ground on that one. So fair play to him.
Yes, and I think I'm going to go with Cloverfield just because not that big a horror person. And the Blair Witch Project was sort of impressive on a technical level, but I wasn't that engaged by it.
Yes.
Whereas Cloverfield was far more involving for me.
Yeah.
I think it sort of did a bit more with it as well. Mm. So Cloverfield for me.
Yeah. No, fair enough. Good work. You can let us know your thoughts on that and anything else movie-wise. podcast@moviebanter.co.uk.
Or you can tweet us at @Twitter/moviebanter.
Indeed. That's it for now, and do tune in next time. And if you'd like to give us a lovely review on iTunes, then we'd love you for it.
Oh, yes.
Only 5 stars, please. If you're going to do 4, then just tell your friends.
Well, exactly.
Just, don't put it online.
4's all right, but 3. No, 3's.
But ideally 5's. Well,
Oh, yes.
And, do let us now know, if you've never emailed us before, then do drop us a line. Why not now? Why not take that opportunity now and let us know you're out there and wherever you are in the world. So, but anyway, thank you for listening, and we'll catch you another time.
Yes. Bye.
Bye.